pals.
Greetings, pals.
Greetings, pals.
Welcome to the podcast, Rowan the Pal.
Yep.
Love it or hate it, we debate it. It being movies.
Yes.
I'm Frank.
I'm Marcus.
I'm Tom.
Today we're talking about Knock at the Cabin, directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalama ding dong.
Came out in 2023, 1 hour, 40 minutes. I don't know if that matters.
That I'll never starring, get back. I'm just throwing that in.
Starring Dave, hey, don't, no spoilers. Starring Dave Bautista, Jonathan Groff, Ben Aldridge, and more. And Emmalite Shyamalan's in it as well. Emmalite? Emmalite.
All right then.
Emmalite?
All right.
What does the M stand for?
So on this podcast, we rate films out of 11.
What does the M stand for?
I used to know that. I don't.
It's Mr.
Mr. Night Shyamalan.
I believe so. That's what I call him.
Did you guys, we had a cubby house growing up. Did we have a secret knock?
On this podcast, we rate films out of 11.
I'm going to try to think of it.
If you're going to knock 11 times.
No, no. Why would I do? Oh, because we rate things out of 11 on this podcast.
Ah, do we?
Do we?
Do we?
Really?
Why, Tom?
I'd say that's roughly the number of accents Rupert Grint has in this movie.
Accurate.
Yeah, probably.
It's good. It's good.
And
it's good.
I like Rupert Grint in this movie, but he is
the accent's
all
bad.
Over he's the shop. Been,
and yeah, he's like, I'm from.
If there was a shop, he's all over.
I'm
it.
From Memphis. And I like doing this, and it's like, whoa.
Massachusetts.
Whoa, lots going on there.
There's three accents in one word.
Yeah.
But still, I'm glad he, spoiler alert, I'm glad he gets killed early. So, shout your name if you like this film.
Tom. Yeah, I knew this was going to happen.
For good.
Ooh.
What? That's the surprise.
Tiny itty bitty bitty
frame. Wait, okay.
I liked it. Yeah, give me some numbers.
Do you want to start negative?
Yeah, I do.
Go on.
I'm going to start with 3.5.
Whoa. 3.5? That's really bad. I'm going to go, because I feel like I'll be lower than Tom, I'm going to go 6. Just.
Oh, I'm so surprised at that.
Just.
Tiny bit lower than me.
Oh, okay.
9.8.
What?
That is fucking outrageous.
That's outrageous.
This is outrageous.
I adore this movie. This is my third time seeing it. I saw it in cinemas at the start of last year, and I was absolutely swept up with it. All three times. I like it the tiniest bit less. When I first watched it, I looked at my Letterboxd for that and I gave it a 10. And now it's like 0.2 less, which okay. I think because it's a thriller. You know what? I'm getting into
it. And because Letterboxd is 10 out of 10.
No, right? I add my ratings.
You
in
said
brackets
10 out
at the
of
end. Wow. I always put them out of 11 at the end.
Do you
yeah, 100%.
Okay, you are so obnoxious. Anyone on Letterboxd be like, why does this guy care about 11?
Yeah.
I'm so obnoxious.
Do you then link the podcast and say, please listen?
You would love that.
You should.
Do you then give us free promotion?
If anyone else cared about producing or sharing or like promoting this podcast, gosh.
Oh, my God.
All right. So quick synopsis.
Mum's mad. Spent all day cooking this meal and you went to McDonald's on the way home.
That's while accurate. Vacationing, oh, that's a girl accurate. And her parents are taken hostage by armed strangers who demand that the family make a choice to avert the apocalypse.
Great log line for a great movie.
Log line.
So here's the deal, right? Here's the deal, Tom.
Sorry,
stay
just,
with me.
Jennifer Frank was just dealing with that two-syllable word there.
Log line.
He only just got it out. Yeah. Log line. The human torch was denied a bank loan.
Log line. It's hard to say.
Tom, yeah. We now have we're in a good position here. Tom, Frank hates that my leg's up right now. By the way, I'm in my pajamas because this movie was such a snore fest.
Oh, boom, boom, boom.
Put the pajamas on 30 minutes ago for this bitch.
Tom, I think we can spend this ep trying to bring Frank across.
That's a good point.
Yeah, this is a really good position to be in.
And I'm in a weird, I was conflicted the whole way because you know I don't like scary movies. But I didn't pee-pee.
Yeah.
I felt pretty comfortable.
And he's in a tricky spot because he likes to follow the crowd and he can't think for himself.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think we're in a really good position here.
Frank doesn't seem to know
Frank,
what to think about that.
Don't think for yourself. And he goes, yes, you're right.
Yes, of course. I apologize. Let me know what I should say. Do you know who's good in this?
I think the entire cast, but go on.
That's way to spoil my bit. Oh. Yeah, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, I apologize.
Yeah,
everyone is really good at
this. It's surprisingly, not surprisingly, but gosh, for the flaws in the dialogue, because the dialogue is weird and not very good and not very human, I feel like it's not written by a real human person.
No, it's not.
M. Night Shyamalan is not a real human.
No, he's not. He might be the strangest cat alive.
Yeah, that's true.
I think everyone in this film was fantastic.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's your 3.8 mostly.
Yep.
The cast.
And everything else is bad.
it. Correct.
You know, and I wish there was more specificity about what has to happen to prevent the apocalypse, why that has to happen to prevent the apocalypse, what the apocalypse is,
it's who's so in convoluted and just absurd.
I don't think
absurd.
I don't mind the absurdity. I'm like, the concept I think is
the
pretty,
premise is great.
Yeah, of
that's
course.
Another point too for me. Mm-hmm. The premise and the performances,
yeah,
with everything going against them, backed by a writer who should have been stopped a long time ago, who's really only ever hit the mark twice, right? And I'm saying that lightly.
What are they? What do you like of his?
Sixth Sense, amazing.
Not seen
right?
it.
Right? Known for it.
Mm-hmm.
Signs, close. Yeah, Signs sure. is fantastic.
Swing Away.
Yeah.
That scene where the alien walks across in that found footage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, basically, the origin of, oh, well, no, that's not true. Blair Witch had come out by then, but still, like, that was a very big antecedent for found footage stuff.
Did it's he incredible. Do Split?
He did.
Yep. Then
he
I'll
did.
Say three.
I haven't seen Split.
I've seen
Unbreakable Split. Is yeah. – it's like there's something there.
He didn't direct Split, Unbreakable Kimmy
Split's
Schmidt.
Fine.
Unbreakable Kimmy
Glass.
Split.
Glass is atrocious. So he does this little superhero trilogy.
What
there.
About Trap and Old? Because I haven't seen either of those. Old apparently is better than this.
I felt trapped and I felt old watching both. Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, Jesus.
anyway, we're back onto this.
We've talked a decent about you and I, Marcus, about this era of Shyamalan's career.
I just think he's so overrated. And if you say, no, he's not that rated at all, I disagree. I think everyone knows who M. Night Shyamalan is.
Yes. Yep. He had insane success earlier. You know,
I think The Village is pretty good. And sorry, I think just to go back. Yeah, yeah. Like, at the time when it came out, everyone was like, oh, the twist. Yeah. Ooh, he's
and
doing
I think
that so well.
Even The Village was a bit of a bummer for me. I didn't really – I was like, yeah, okay, sure.
I think what's aged best from that movie is Adrian Brody's performance. That's what you got to go back to and always be like, that's kind of
the,
yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't know if you remember.
I don't
it's
remember.
It's not good.
Along with the Jamaican accent he did that one time on SNL, it's pretty up there as something I'm sure he regrets. He's playing a severely mentally disabled person.
Oh, he's the guy that I remember from Scary Movie. Yeah.
However, as weird as that performance is and the demands of it, I don't hate it. I think it's a swing. He swings away, you know.
Oh, yeah. Shyamalan references.
The Sixth
Cabin
Sense,
in the Woods. The Knock Sixth of the Sense,
I just want to say very quickly. For
sorry.
No. Like, that'll be Butler's Pantry stuff. You're right. Knock at the Cabin.
Knock at the Cabin.
I went and saw this at the cinema with a mutual friend of ours, Josh, at the start of last year, and yep. I didn't know anything about it. It's what I try to do with all movies, but especially Shyamalan movies.
Sure.
Because I know Trap. I went and saw that the same way, and I know almost everyone who went to see it was like, oh, yeah, well, I knew what's going to happen because of the trailer. And I was like, well, I didn't watch the trailer. Like, I walked out of the room.
I would argue that you know what's going to happen from the first third of the film onward. And then
no, because you feel like something's going
to
happen.
It reveals that to you in Trap. Knock at the Cabin, the tension in that movie and people watching it, I seem to find that I've spoken to people and I've seen people's takes online where they go, what pisses me off about this movie is you're waiting for the twist. You're waiting for,
and it never comes.
Well, what is it actually? Because it can't be the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Now, this is why this movie worked for me. I immediately believed that the apocalypse was going to happen and that they were telling the truth. And so the tension of the film was not, when's the twist going to come? I was like, how the fuck are they going to convince them that this is real?
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch the movie with that framing, it's terrifying. And it's so emotionally gripping because you're like, that's the hardest conversation ever. It's impossible to convince people this absurd premise is real and that they need to take it at face value.
Yep.
And the more I watched it with that in mind of a real loving family, the first time it just swept me up. I was just like, I can't handle how difficult this would be.
I agree. And I think all four performances of so who we got there? Nikki Anouk-Bird, Rupert Grint, Abby Quinn, and Dave Bautista, right?
All amazing.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
And but most of them relatively unknown, and Dave Bautista had pretty much just come off Guardians and is not known for acting, no. is he?
He's
known
for being a big boy. Like, he, Blade Runner, he has a very small role.
He's really good.
But that's
in Blade
kind
Runner.
Of the moment where a lot of directors went, is Dave Bautista secretly amazing? And yes, he's had such a good run the last
Except for
few years.
I think with the right directors.
Frank just slandered him. He's so good in Dune.
When?
Oh, don't.
When
we're not
he's
doing
on
this again.
Screen.
We're not
don't
doing
worry.
This again. We're not doing this again.
It's okay.
Anyway, the cast is excellent. And I think that they've done really well with very little. I think that it's
such a minimalist
hard script to pull off convincingly. And I think, though, if you're looking at the premise, which, again, I think is there's a good idea here somewhere, although to me it's more like M. Night sat down with a laptop open and went, it's based, would you rather...
It is adapted. It's adapted from a book by Paul Tremblay.
It is, and moved away from the source material too.
We'll get to that.
But it is a would you rather concept. It's like, would you rather face the apocalypse or shoot one of your family?
Yeah, that is basically it at its
heart. It's kind of it. And then you say that these four people have a really hard job in coming to convince this family that they have to do the right thing, right? You know, for the greater good, essentially. Maybe don't turn up with weapons in hand and, like, approach it the way you approached it. Maybe there's a different way to handle this. I don't know.
So that's one thing I wish is, like, why did they approach it that way? But why did they have to die?
Why is it so ritualistic? Like, and even the way they hold the weapons before they're about to off each other, this robotic stature that they do and they sort of march
very
in position.
Inhuman.
And yeah, like
where did that come from? I wish we got a little bit of backstory for them. We get backstory for the couple and for the family. We have no backstory for any of them. So it's like shrouded in mystery, but
the red herring on O'Bannon.
Yeah, Redmond.
Oh, but that's the most pointless sidebar of all.
I agree.
Of them.
Because it's the only time they give you a background on someone and they try to throw you off.
Because what does it matter that he
beats him up in a bar? Throw off the scent. It's basically to say this is a conspiracy. They are all banding together, and then they throw in the whole like chat room thing. And
Andrew needs something the whole movie to latch onto, and so that's the last thing he's holding onto when he gets the idea out. And he's like, "Well, yeah, it is this guy from before." Yeah. So this has all been a setup, and you've all done this for whatever reason. I think it also fits very well thematically. This is obviously a movie that is using this as an analogy or a sort of parable, not just for what it is to raise kids in this world, in a scary world, but what it is to be a same-sex couple and still queer in 2023, 2024, in an era where we think of these things as we've moved past, we've become very progressive, and no, people are still targeted. And the scene with them at the bar is so upsetting that O'Bannon comes up and says, "Can you be quiet?" to these gay guys and then comes back and hits him twice with a bottle over the head. It's so confronting. It's so...
Unexpectedly violent.
Oh, God, it's so violent. Yeah. And it explains so much about Andrew's character when you have that texture.
Yeah.
And you know about how he
and
has...
And then you get his Rocky training montage where he starts boxing.
I didn't mind it.
Him
I was like,
getting the gun, him getting... When he's just staring dead ahead, when he's getting the back of his head stitched up, it's so upsetting. I agree that it does...
It's so heavy-handed.
It is heavy-handed. I don't think it's a subtle movie, but I think it's very well wielded by Shyamalan. I think that the lack of backstory for the characters plays into the element of the movie that I'm not that interested in, which, as I said before, like, I believe them from the get-go. Yeah. But I get that there are people who are like, well, if we show you their backstories, then there's no mystery left. Then of course we know it's true. If we show you them having these visions and actually being drawn together, it's like, well, then there's no tension to that. Then you know it's real and there's nothing for you and Andrew and Eric to latch onto. I don't need that stuff because I'm already convinced of them and I believe
that. I was already convinced that I'm more curious.
Yeah.
I would just love to see it at some point because it sounds so
the intrigue caught you.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then it's...
I couldn't get past the silliness of it straight away. Like I try not to get too hung up on little plot holes or little things like, well, were these people four people have turned up to their cabin, right? They've knocked seven times. They've got their weapons. They're looking out the blinds and like, Jesus Christ, they've got weapons. They've got a back door. Go. Get out of there.
Just
like
start running.
There was no urgency to the situation other than, yeah, it's a bit weird. Like, I don't feel comfortable with this.
I find that sequence so upsetting immediately and so reminiscent of something that's happening that you never expect and that it doesn't feel supernatural in that first moment. You're like, this is just a home invasion. And you're right that if these guys actually want to convince them of something, bad way to go about it, but it does set up that immediate like anxiety and apprehension.
But also,
it is at odds with their intent, but that's kind of the difficulty of the whole film that's like, how do we try and convince them of this without scaring them? But what we have to do is scary.
It's silly. You've got a guy who's 7 foot something stupid. Like, Batista's huge,
he's
so big. Right?
He put on more weight for this movie as well.
He comes through the woods
on
his own first. They turn up separately even though they came in the same vehicle, which is the weird first weird thing, right?
I think he – sorry, you go.
He's going ahead as the diplomat.
I think so.
Okay.
Right.
So he's the diplomat, the 7 foot giant – walking through the forest to the little girl and then saying, I want to be your friend. immediately red flags.
And yet,
the
second he opens his mouth, he's the most gentle man alive.
Of course,
he's
so
beautifully.
And his dialogue is really
so
sweet.
Tender.
Yeah. And as an audience member, you're telling me you're still comfortable with this situation, not knowing anything.
No. And that's the tension.
Because
I'm like,
you're thinking this enormous man next to this, there's a juxtaposition because you don't know what to feel because you're like, well, he is being really kind.
This is me picking a plot hole in their entire approach
to this
situation.
But it's like, if you walked up to a kid, it's like, yeah, you're six something and big and broad. Yeah. Oh, well, watch out for Marcus. It's like, we know that you're not going
to
hurt this kid.
Yeah, but that's why I'd send Goofy here in first. I'd send him to disarm them.
Nope,
I
wouldn't either.
Talking about you. immediate way to get the police called. So.
Yeah, Tom,
well, I'm not going to hurt you.
Tom's the worst choice in his open shirt speedo.
I have a working with children's check and I still think they'd be like, okay, well. Yeah.
Anyway. He goes in, he approaches the kid, he tries to become friends. She gets alarmed, she runs into the parents, they lock the door. Now, the four of them then approach the doors. Now they all have weapons. They don't surround the house because let's not forget that the importance of these people in this house is that they are the only people that can stop the apocalypse. It seems a little silly to not really surround the premises. If the whole thing is we can't let these guys get away, let's all go to the front door and hold our weapons there and knock on the door. They'll be cool. And they're like, hey, let's not scare them. That's the dialogue.
Yeah.
Mm. Chill. We can't scare them. O'Bannon's like flying off the handle because he's, you know,
I'm a renegade.
He's impatient. And
but he's the most obvious character as like a necessity to kind of increase the severity and the tension of things. I keep using the word tension, but it's going to come up over and over. It's the reason he's dispelled earliest. Because you're like, yeah, this guy's not much of a character. No. He's sort of an agent or a catalyst. I think the others are much more well-woven and have more texture to
them. But seems smarter too, especially when you find out a little bit of their background as to what they do professionally. I still think that their plan is way off. It's got to be the writing. Like, I just don't like it. I just don't like how they've delivered this and presented it
to us
as an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all silly. It's so ludicrous and so silly and too large for me. I think if you're going to really underplay, because Judgment Day is big. That's the biggest thing that can happen ever, period. So I think make everything understated leading up to that if you can, like try and really mellow out so that you can sell the big point.
I think it was surprisingly mellow, especially
Leonard. The whole thing about Leonard is he's so soft-spoken.
And also, he does Gentle Giant.
So is Sabrina, who's the nurse, and Adrian, who's the chef. Like, they're all trying their best to make it as calm and as colloquial as possible. Like
one who gets the most aggressive is, of course, Daddy Andrew, like Ben Aldridge. He's the one who reacts, and he's the one that's like, this is insane what you're all doing. And he's the one who starts escalating the situation, as you would. You know, I found myself continually thinking, like, if I was sitting there and these people were adamant in trying to say this, I'd be like, I don't give a fuck if this is true. I'm not going to kill them. Nothing you can say is going to make me do this. Mm. So we're at a stalemate. That's the genius of the film to me, is that it's an impasse that gets set up immediately and you go, how are they going to overcome this?
Yeah.
And it does get to that point, and we'll get to it because this will be one of those movies that I will find a little tricky to talk about in the closing moments because it's very emotional and it gets me every time. Yeah. Every time. I find it so, so devastatingly sad how this movie ends. Frank, you're giving me a bit of a skeptical look.
No, not skeptical. I was just remembering it and then looking at you. And then thinking about death.
I honestly feel like I've lost Frank already. Like, I feel like you've been defending the for it points already.
No, but I do. I agree with what you're saying as well, because it isn't. It doesn't. It's a pretty nonsensical.
I hated the ending.
Experience.
But this is. We've talked about this before in other pods again, where it's like if you don't buy in from the start.
Yeah.
Again, I've watched this twice.
Yeah.
I really, really, really tried. I was like, I've got to see the good in it. I've got to find, because I immediately didn't like it.
Yeah.
And second watch, I went, nope, come on, Marcus. What can you do here? What about it is redeeming?
Yeah.
Did you like it more the second
watch? No. Because I spiraled.
Yeah.
And the ending for me was just like, not hallmarks a bit harsh, but like it was silly.
It's very.
The playing of the song.
Cloying. very sentimental. It's pushing all the buttons to try and get you to that emotional level. Like it's a climax, like operatic almost, because it's the end of the world.
Do you mean, sorry, I think Marcus is referring to when they get in the car.
When they get in the car.
And it's sort of that quiet moment and it's like Casey and the Sunshine Band starts playing.
So and they stop it. Silly.
And then the, is it
when puts it on and she turns it off. And then Daddy Andrew puts it on again and they drive off together.
She puts it back
but
on.
But wait.
Oh, no. And then they both do it twice. And it's so good.
We're in Redmond's car, right?
Yeah.
Presumably.
So
yes,
why is that? Because that song's playing.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any. Thank you.
That doesn't make any sense.
Because I was like, hold on. He just checked.
And yet you love it.
Oh, yeah.
You're a sicko.
I adore this film. I think that Shyamalan's dialogue doesn't always work for me. In this movie, I think it's perfect.
I don't think he's nearly as clever as he tries to be. The thing is, I'm being really harsh. He, from what I've read and heard, he's actually a really nice guy. Everyone loves working with M. Night.
Everyone loves working
with him. Yeah, yeah. And so I hate
night shoots.
I think, though, again, going back to... Oh, I'm ignoring him.
That's pretty fun.
Silly bit.
Working at night.
I think, again, with his initial hits, and let's say it flopped after The Village, for me personally. Yeah. I think The Village was really not there, but...
Yeah.
I think everyone's sort of somewhat in the same boat, whether they admit it or not. I think everyone's backing M. Night. Come on, man, you've got the next one. Let's go, the next one will be good.
We want to see him succeed because he's doing stuff that's interesting.
Yeah. He's trying.
He's making original film.
You know a movie by M. Night the second a character opens their mouth. Even from the first like couple of frames, you're like, I know this guy. He's very adventurous. He's very self-serious, and yet he's a little goofy. And the weirdness and the push and pull is trying to work out if he knows that it's goofy or not.
Mm.
I would argue this is one of his most serious films, and I think it's a kind of miraculous that it works on that level. There's a handful of bits in this movie that I do think are funny and are meant to be funny. But mostly it's very, played very straight and very excessively, like, austere, the framework of it.
So we talked about the original book.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Butler's Corner?
Yeah, go for it.
Go on.
Butler's Corner.
Yeah, we got a new one now.
The Butler. In the corner.
It's a corner. In the corner. Yeah.
The Butler's Corner.
Whoops. Anyway, go on, the book.
Idiot.
Oh, am I in the pantry?
Yeah, you're right.
Marcus's pantry.
Tom's Marcus's corner.
No one knows anything about
this.
There's a
chocolate fountain and everything.
That's not chocolate.
There's dead.
there's dead children.
Okay, so to my knowledge, the
what?
Whoa, that's dark for Frank.
What a twist!
A raspberry twist.
The book ends with them walking off into the forest and us not knowing what happened. What the truth is.
That's not even the whole ending. It's even darker than that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nighttime.
They're messing around.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, this one's it's nighttime.
M. Night
picked up the script and went, it's nighttime.
M. That's his like move. That is so weird.
That's how he is.
It's nighttime, baby.
I jumped ahead a point. Sorry. Yes. So they're scrambling for the gun.
Mm.
They're scrambling for the gun and accidentally goes off and it kills Wen.
Ah. Oh,
and then Leonard says, sorry, that doesn't count because it was an accident. So Eric and Andrew, one of you still has to choose if you're going to sacrifice the other, and they don't, and the world ends, and they just wander off. Eric and Andrew wander off into the apocalypse together.
Without Wen.
And I think M. Night, along with every sensible person in the world, was like, yeah, cool. You'll go to jail if you make this movie. Like, they will actually bring you up on charges.
They would.
If you crime shoot the child and then you go and walk into the apocalypse, no money, we are not
That's an interesting ending.
M. Night Shyamalan.
It's heartbreaking.
Who
has
his movies distributed by Warner Brothers and Universal?
Well, then get
a
different director.
Going to get to make that movie.
The wrong director directed this book. There we go, fine. I said it.
If you want to call up the guy who made a Serbian film, I'm sure he's going to make
that
movie.
That's too far and no.
I don't know, man. I struggle to think of a darker movie that could be popularly released.
You're talking about two different things
Thank
here.
Okay,
you're talking about two different things. You couldn't release a mainstream movie that has that ending.
Of course
yes,
not.
That ending would not. Be better and more interesting, but awful, and I wouldn't want to watch it.
I don't think any money. You literally have to like call up a Russian oligarch
so let's think
who
about
has
like,
money and is just like, yeah, I'll pay for this. But no one's going to finance
don't
that movie.
Don't do the story, which I think is an interesting and powerful story, a disservice. By doing what the studios want. Do a different story.
I prefer the movie ending. I think the ending of when getting shot randomly, to me, having not read the book, reads as a little bit of like, how dark can we make this? And how much can we plunge into the despair of the situation?
But you yourself as a cinema goer enjoys a film that ends on credits where you and the rest of the audience collectively sit there in silence and have to process what you've just seen, correct?
That's what I did with this movie.
Wow. Okay. 100%. Sure.
Because Daddy...
Daddy.
They're both called Daddy. They're our daddies.
Yeah, stop.
They are. Daddy Andrew, Daddy
Eric. I don't like it coming out of Tom's mouth.
Yeah. It's nice when Wen says it.
I love Wen so much. Kristen Kui, I think her name. Yeah, C-U-I. I don't know. She's amazing. Yeah,
she's so good.
She's...
Her Ben Aldridge, Jonathan Groff. What a trio.
Yes, unreal. Absolutely. Jonathan Groff season.
The new man. Let's do another Jonathan Groff.
Let's never get Groff. What? Let's always get on.
Anyway, Gron.
We're getting Groff the trail.
Yes! Best one yet! It's not bad.
That was good.
It wasn't that good, but
it was the best one yet. I still think we're in the pantry, so briefly, about Shyamalan, because you were talking about where people were on him and people were off him.
Yep.
1999, Sixth Sense.
Get off him. Yeah, no,
sorry. 1999, The Sixth Sense comes out. Makes a lot of money, gets nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, and then he turns 30, right? He's so young when that happens. Yeah, wow. Like, it's insane how early that happens in his career, where it's like, yeah, you're now one of the hottest directors in the world and you're just at the start. What do you want to do now? Like, he's, what, 50-something now, 53? He's so young. But he then does Unbreakable. That's all right, whatever. Mm. And then I love it, but people didn't love it. And then he does Signs, which is a bit of a comeback. People are into that. And The Village, as much as you say, Frank, that there's a huge cult around that now, and that is a reclaimed movie, people did not like that movie when it came out.
No.
People
really?
Hated no. that twist.
Really?
Which I think is absurd. I think that movie rules. I think it's really
good.
It's
a great twist. I was in that group, and now I've had time to sort of process. I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
I think it's super cool. I think it's such
a cool.
Super cool.
Super cool.
Super hot. I think it's such an interesting use of like fear, and it's kind of like a modern Crucible. Like it's taking a society, a small group of people, and looking at how they erect these.
It's my
childhood.
Let me just say that. It's like religion.
Yeah, it's about, you know, yeah, erecting these like borders.
We're cutting that.
Around.
Oh, can't keep saying erecting.
Okay. It's about circumcising. It's about, yeah, creating these borders that stop people from being able to live a true life, but then creating this like restriction and the weirdness of that fear and the way that they create the monsters in that, which are so creepy.
Holy
in the village.
Shit. Yeah. Sorry, I'm hijacking this.
Can that's okay. Go.
Keep your point, but I'm going to forget it otherwise.
Yeah.
M. Night really likes boxing people in. Holy shit.
This is
it's just occurred to me.
He literally puts people, Trap.
Trap?
Old.
Devil.
Devil.
In the elevator.
Which he didn't direct. He produced that, but yes.
Still.
The Visit.
Yep.
And this one, Knock at the Cabin. He puts people now in these boxes and he watches them. It's the ladybug.
Social experiment.
The grasshoppers at the start. The second you see that, you're like, that's what this movie is. We're going to get all these people into a jar and we're going to watch
Dave, how Dave Bautista's like, hold on. Let them calm down first.
I love that so much.
Because you know what that is. I'm discovering this in real time and this is kind of nice.
It's awesome what
this
he does.
This might have just... Flip the switch for me.
Marcus is going to throw
a little bit on M. Night.
You may have done it for myself, actually.
I'm not giving you the credit.
That's fine.
Yeah, you've thrown in your own own power.
But anyway, after The Village, things do go downhill for him. He does like Lady in the Water and The Happening and
And then The Last Airbender.
Last Airbender, which you could reclaim so many of his movies. I think The Happening's kind of a fun, bad
Is The
mess.
Happening the one where they're in the mist? No, that's The Mist.
No. The Happening's the one where something happens.
Yeah.
It's present tense, though. It hasn't happened.
And The Village is set in
Times Square.
Skyscraper. Yes. The Happening
Hamlet.
There's that one scene in The Happening I remember where the people just start dropping off buildings and stuff.
Incredible scene.
Yeah.
But it is largely Mark Wahlberg playing a physics professor or like a biologist. Can't remember.
Hard sell. You're going to be like.
Zooey Deschanel giving one of the most disastrous performances in the history of cinema. It's
but that would have
so
been studio interference. You absolutely. Imagine? Like, that's the height of Wahlberg's fame, probably the height of Zooey Deschanel. And they're like,
the height. She's not doing New Girl at that
what
time.
What a weird combo, like, though.
Yeah.
That doesn't work at all. Work at all.
Mark Wahlberg is the strangest lead of anything that isn't a dumb action.
Yes.
Except for maybe Boogie Nights, but that's when he's not Mark Wahlberg, yeah.
Yeah, his Booger Nights were crazy, man. He just couldn't. He was so congested. He just had to
pick and roll, pick
his
and roll.
Booger, booger, booger
nights. Hey, Mr.
All that to say that Shyamalan's had his ups and downs, and with Old, well, The Visit somewhat, and now with Old, it's felt like a comeback. Now, people don't love Old. I don't love Old. I got to rewatch it. Maybe I'll like
again,
it.
Again, so it's another failed premise to me with outstanding performances from the majority.
Good premise, bad ending?
Just bad.
Yeah, the ending to that movie is quite like,
stupid.
Ugh.
What's happening? The beach is...
Stupid.
The beach is making
spoilers for the beach, the Leo DiCaprio movie.
Old.
He's on the beach. No, spoilers for Old. Yeah, the beach makes you old because it's like the rocks are an experiment, so they can measure what happens to people who are sick over time, and then they can work out how
it's
to cure
it's accelerated healing.
Yes.
Is kind of what they're experimenting. So
if we give you a drug and then you've got a predisposition to Alzheimer's and then we age you up to 70 within a few hours, how does that drug affect your neurodegeneration? And so then the movie ends with the two characters growing up and then discovering the scientists are doing it, being like, we caught you. And then they fly away on a helicopter and you're like, what is this? It's very strange.
Nukem Rico. It's
it's like he can't think of endings because that premise is pretty crazy. And you go,
that's what I mean. I think M. Night always comes up with a cool concept.
Yeah. And that one's also, act one, that act one's two. Also based on something.
And I just don't think he ever can execute and finish. Right? Is my point.
Can't get there to completion.
Same setting. The cabin. Other than the overly forceful sort of entry when they're trying to be subtle and calm and whatever.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, the majority of the film, Knock at the Cabin, as we're circling back to what we're talking about.
Yes, of course.
It works in a weird way. Mm-hmm. The ending dies for me yet again for an M. Night show. And he's known for his endings, which is the part I don't understand.
He's known for the twist.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Everyone watches an M. Night film for the twist.
They're waiting for the third.
It never works outside of the ones where it did, which was a small minority of his credits. Mm. It's a weird concept. And again, it's everyone backing M. Night going, come on, man, you got it twice. We want that twist. Give me the twist. I missed again. Go, give the ball back. Do another one. Have another shot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I do know what you mean.
I'm getting passionate, but
he's Lucy with the football and we're Charlie Brown going to.
Yeah, he's the Make-A-Wish kid of the football.
Laces out.
We are just like spinning around.
We're spinning. I think that's why I like Knock at the Cabin so much and Trap. To a lesser extent, I know you didn't like
Are
Trap.
They straight down
no,
the line
I think,
movies?
I think for the first time ever in an M. Night film, Josh Hartnett's performance was too much.
Interesting.
Too much.
He's ramping that up as it goes on. I think he's kind of
it's
amazing.
It's so forced.
Is it better than Pearl Harbor?
Forced.
His performance. Yes.
Oh right. That was a pretty devastating day in American history. Is his performance better than Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I don't know. I'd have to line it up somewhere.
What's the death toll?
From Josh Hartnett's performance in that movie, it's quite high, actually.
Hey, spoilers. Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Is that
it.
Just the audience that watched it?
Yes.
They feel dead inside.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like that movie. Knock at the Cabin.
What I love about Knock at the Cabin
you
is the emotionality of the performance.
It's so good.
Sure. Is that enough to get you
over the line?
Yeah, absolutely it is.
Sure, okay.
Because I think the four, let's call them the horsemen, because that's what they're referred to, which I don't agree with. It's the dumbest correlation ever.
Sorry, our biblical correspondent, Frank, here in the room, can you just tell me?
Was
one of my notes? Yeah, because
I can't. I
really
don't know. Yeah,
They were war, pestilence, death, and famine.
Famine. The bit is that they're our four horsemen. They're the inverse, right? They came to us with the kindness instead. So they're the four horsemen of our apocalypse, but they came to us with. I was watching the movie the first time, and he said they're the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and it was one of the only moments in the movie where I was like, yeah, you could lose that. You don't need that line. Like that's.
But that
I don't
Tom,
need that.
The whole film centers around that plot point. That's their point. Well, actually, let's talk about the news reports.
Yeah.
Stupid.
The tsunami is scary. It doesn't make any sense. But I think it's still very scary.
Remind me, is that the big CGI stupid tsunami?
I think
one where they did the live broadcast and forgot the footage?
How did they discover
that's
camera?
That's the part where I'm like, so how did you get this?
Yeah.
Like,
if it's supposedly
we're going
live
to a man with an iPhone. Yeah. It's like, what?
If they're live,
he's gone live
they
on
need the graphics on the screen to show us it's live, because to me that looked like found footage.
Well, that's what he said. Daddy Andrew was like, well, this is a pre-recorded segment. They knew this was going to be on at this time. They're showing us this footage.
None of that makes sense.
This is pre-programmed TV.
Yep.
I think the tsunami sequence is very creepy because of the way that it is for a solid 30 seconds, a bunch of people just being like, what do we do here? And you do feel that unsettling, like, Jesus, guys, you got to start moving. Once it actually hits the guy, that part of my brain does go off that goes like, well, that doesn't make any sense. But anyway.
No, he threw it and it landed in the studio.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, big obviously. Throw.
The four horsemen, just quickly, are conquest, war, famine, and death.
There we go.
Conquest
was the first
one. And so in this version, they are, yes, they come instead with kindness and benevolence. They're the four horsemen of this apocalypse because they decide.
Benevolence always sounds like a nasty word, but it does. It's not.
Because it sounds like malevolence. Slant rhyme.
Yeah.
You learn something.
Slant writing, italics.
Frank loves learning words.
Actually, benevolence and malevolence are just a straight up rhyme. I apologize. Anyway, the
dumb idiot. Nice one, idiot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dumb, so dumb. Yeah, so the emotionality of the performances really gets me. That's what I think. It's for me. Everyone's just beautiful in this.
I agree. Can I say something just about the airplane sequence?
You can try.
Yeah. I was over on my holiday when I watched this, and I was 3 hours away from getting on a plane. And I almost had to turn the bits off with the airplanes falling out of the sky.
Are you a nervous flyer?
Never. And that sequence really gets me because it is so upsetting, just this continual peppering of just planes just dropping and people just being like, what the fuck do we do? Thank you for, yep.
Ooh.
That's when with the pepper.
Yeah, I'm just referencing the movie.
Yeah. When?
When?
Say when. When.
Yes.
Say when.
When. You're the worst.
Why?
You know
why. We're here to have a good time.
The planes falling out of the sky was so upsetting. I find that very, very... And even just the images of like... Because there's the one in Sydney Harbour with the plane just smoldering.
It just felt so close to home, you know? It was like they put Australia in
there. It could have been
like,
me. Oh,
could have been me.
It's always Sydney Harbour too. It's like, hey, what about Melbourne?
I still found it silly, man. The film had already lost me at this point. What about Melbourne?
And you're like, oh, God, of course it goes around the world.
Here we go.
The news footage of the worldwide disaster. Here we go again. What is this, Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, I also don't know.
Okay.
I do
shall we get into, because it's the thing you've talked about many times.
What's with the hoods and the executions? Like, what are we doing here?
It's part of the ritual.
But what's the ritual?
The ritual is something
weird.
Yeah,
Tom, they're trying not to freak these guys out. They're trying to get a valid response from them. Now let's put a hood on them and bash their brains in front of them.
Why are they there to convince them to kill one of their family members, but yet with each passing hour or day they have to kill one of themselves, and it doesn't stop anything. It doesn't prevent any other death if Rupert Grint dies.
It starts the chain of events, which they've committed to.
Yeah.
By them dying, it starts a chain of...
Yeah, now, so each person is...
How about not?
So...
But then who's coming to get them?
Defy the ritual and the visions that they've been having because they think it's going to upset the people.
Yes.
Fuck everything, right?
Correct.
I don't think that what they're doing is going to work. It's like,
the consequence? What's the consequence if they don't do that? Because the consequence of them killing themselves is the tsunami, is the plague, is this.
They haven't seen the consequence, to my knowledge.
Yes, they have. Oh, they've seen what they know they will unleash, and if they don't do it, the apocalypse will happen. They are sacrificing one another. This is my inference, because they never explain it in a way that I do find kind of intriguing and upsetting. They are sacrificing one another to unleash a plague or sort of a result, but to still forestall the apocalypse. If they didn't kill Redmond, the apocalypse would happen. If they didn't kill Adrian, the apocalypse
would happen.
They're buying time. They're buying time, but each one is still a moment of the biblical plagues of Egypt, right?
Yeah,
or anything. It's something that's happening as a forewarning or like a precursor.
All right, so if we're trying that on for size, how about just not murdering them so brutally?
In front of each other?
In front of each other.
To show the severity of what they're doing.
It might
to show the severity of why they're here. But I also don't think that's their choice. I don't think Dave Bautista's like, right, so what we have to do is craft these weapons and kill each other in front of it because that'll show we're serious. They are doing what they have been
told
to do. Beamed to them by some
And what do they say? It's like
primordial force.
Humanity has
been judged, or a part of humanity has been judged, right? And it's all about judgment, and it's all about like the anticipation of the end, and whether there's anything we can do to stop it. I don't disagree with you guys that if you look at that stuff and go, that would not convince me. I agree. I think that's at the heart of the film, that you have to be like, how would you convince these people, especially when what is required of the ritual is so upsetting and so visceral?
All right. Well, I'm going to keep trying to pick this apart.
Go
on. You know, you've got an answer for everything, you little smart ass. He gets the gun.
That sequence, when I first saw it, I held my breath.
Yeah, that's a good sequence.
It's so upsetting.
Because you don't want him to kill the nurse, because we like the nurse.
That's
a great point, Frank.
Put yourself in his shoes. The nurse, I would understand. He warns her and he says, please, I don't want to shoot you.
Mm.
Right. The nurse I get. But when it gets to a point where everyone's basically been murdered, time's up, like to the point where he's convinced that they're convinced that time is up.
Yeah.
And Andrew still hasn't bought into this. He's got the gun. He's got the power. At that point, with so much murder surrounding them, there's literally corpses at this cabin.
Mm.
Use the gun, man. I'm putting myself now in the character shoes.
Who's he shooting?
Leonard, you mean?
Shoot Leonard. What are you doing, man? You put him in the bathroom. You still manage to get, like,
he brings out the gun and he hopes that they leave them alone. They go, oh, well, we can't overpower them now because he still thinks it's a home invasion, right? And if they have no weapons, then they're like, well.
They never take an opportunity to escape when they genuinely have one.
Yeah, and they could just point the gun at him and then just bail out the back and be like, stay
the
there.
The big dude got out the tiny window in the bathroom.
That is one of the moments in the film where I'm like, I don't know if M. Night's having a laugh there. Yeah. Because you see the window and you go, well, obviously not.
No. Like, it's so half close the door size. And lock it again. That's right.
Yeah.
But also, just go out one of the doors. You've got the gun still. What's he going to do out in the open? You've still got the gun. Like, I don't know why he had to go in the bathroom and check. It's silly. Go. There's so many opportunities where these guys could have just gone, man, and it pissed me off as a viewer.
There's an elemental force keeping them in the cabin, it seems.
Oh,
there
seems to be something. Throw that in,
you can't.
I'm not saying that there's literally like a, you know, a magic force field or whatever, but that's the movie. That's literally what you were talking about.
The script is keeping them there.
Yes, the script is telling them what to. Damn, this script.
I know my lines so well. The actor's like, I really want to walk away, but I can't. Because the script tells me I have to stand here.
There is a.
Don't go off book.
There is something preventing them from leaving, and it is the
common sense. You're right.
Call to order or the call to action that they've been given in this. And it's like you said, that M. Night pushes people into these confined spaces and he watches what they do. And if they walked out the cabin, you're right, the movie would be over. But I don't want the movie to be over. I want to know what they're going to do. And
suspend
so,
my disbelief and all that in the concept. And blah, blah, blah.
Look, I'm surprised you haven't said Leonard gets shot and just goes like, like just totally takes it like a G and doesn't make a noise when
doesn't
he gets
even die. Because,
no, it gets shot in the arm.
No, because at this point,
and he's just like makes no noise when that happens.
My eyes had rolled so far into the back of my head that I stopped watching the movie. I think at that point,
right?
So like I just whatever happened after that, I was like, yeah, of course he got shot in the arm because he's so.
So you were just looking at an empty space at that point.
Yeah, just like the bit
empty space.
After the bathroom, is my checkout.
I think he missed it.
I was curious at the bit where Dave Bautista. Leonard sacrifices himself in the rocking chair and then it pans back and the chair's like rocking violently.
Yeah.
And it's like,
He's sort of like spasmed.
Yeah, he's going, way, you're rocking.
Yeah, he puts the coins in. He's going for a little ride.
Yeah.
Weird sex toy.
Yeah.
Vibrating rocking chair. People in these cabins.
I'm sure it's
Come
a thing.
Come on, man.
I'm sure it's a thing.
Come off, man. Come groff, Come, man.
Speaking of, the duologue between daddies.
Can we?
You go.
I want to get into the thing that you and I keep talking about, which works for us the most, which is the emotionality, right? And that we have, what drives it for me is the degree to which no one wants to be in this situation. Every single person is like, you don't understand how little I want to be here and how much easier it would be for me to not have to put you through this, subject you to this, and then ask you this impossible thing.
Yeah.
And there are a handful of moments that stand out to me. I'm curious if you have any. One of the earliest ones for me is when Leonard says, he just lets it out. He's like, all right, here's what's going to happen. The apocalypse will happen unless one of you chooses to sacrifice yourself. And Jonathan Groff, Daddy Eric, says, Leonard, we haven't done anything wrong. And barely holding back tears. Mm-hmm. Bautista goes, I agree. I know you haven't. I know that you haven't done anything wrong. And you get how hard this is for him. that he finds it deplorable that he's been put in this situation.
Yeah.
And yet he's compelled to follow through with it.
He has to. They're like,
I buy that. I buy the performances.
Yeah.
I'm not here to shit on that. I really do.
So then Abby Quinn, someone I've seen briefly in a handful of other things, right? She's got a handful of roles. She was in, I'm Thinking of Ending Things. She has a very brief role in a few other things. But she has her scene where she knows she's going to die. And she says, I didn't tell you guys this before, but I actually have a son. And I didn't want to say his name, but he's back home and I've heard him screaming again and again. And if you guys don't do anything, he's going to die. And they say, and Ben Aldridge says, we don't believe you. Nothing you're going to say, let your time run out. And it's the most intense close-up, which Shyamalan comes back to again and again in this movie, just tight on the characters. And she says, his name's Charlie. And he likes pancakes. And I'm just like, I can't with this. This is so upsetting.
Tom's such
the situation. These people are being thrown into the most emotionally wrenching and impossible to balance and to tightrope situation. I can't imagine it.
Of course you can't imagine it. Horrible. And that resonates with me as a parent for the daddies and when.
Mm-hmm.
But that scene, his name is Charlie and he likes pancakes, was the line I scoffed at.
Really?
Really. Because I was right. She was like, I hear his screams.
I've got him.
And it breaks my heart every time. It's like the worst thing I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I can't imagine the torment that she's going through in that moment. But then he likes pancakes.
Do you know what? Yeah, I think his name is Charlie. Far better.
I remember that more. I always remember the line that he likes pancake.
That's not pan. Of course, he likes pancakes, man. Think of something you need.
He's a child.
Yeah, imagine one of them's like, yeah, well, he's five, isn't he? It's like, well, a bit rude.
Yeah, but think of something else.
Fair. No, I agree.
He loves his trains.
But I find that very captivating. And then you were going to talk about the duologue at the end.
So. Well, when they're deciding who to kill, and they're just like, no, kill me. And it's like, they have such a beautiful little life and they don't want to give it up, but they're now convinced they're seeing planes in real life fall down and they're like, we have to. And they're both so passionate and willing to go, which I think is unfathomable.
It's insane. And then Groff says, it's out because our love is pure and we have to do this for them. We have to sacrifice. And Ben Aldridge says my favorite line in the movie that broke me when I first watched it, which is just like, they're not worth it.
They're not fucking worth it.
Why would we do this for them?
Yeah. And then Jonathan Groff goes, do it now while I'm thinking of the happiest memory or the happiest thing of all time.
Relax, Tom.
And he's thinking about
when
growing up and the two of them are together. And again, as a parent, I was like, that's all that matters.
I agree. That was a powerful moment. I think that's, if you're facing death and you've accepted death, I think that is the best way to approach it. That was a beautiful little moment. It's probably the best dialogue in the whole film.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Also,
because it made sense from human mouths.
Can we do MVP?
Yeah.
MVP.
Ben Aldridge.
Yes.
I think it's Ben Aldridge.
Ben Aldridge.
And Jonathan Groff is a very close. Very close. So is Dave Bautista.
And everyone's good.
And Kristen Quay.
Yeah.
Everyone, basically, except Rupert Grint, I think, who's fine.
I wanted to talk about that again. I really think he struggled here, especially because it's a strong ensemble.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's necessarily his fault. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. He wasn't great. Aldridge is outstanding, and it's mainly that when he hits an emotional climax, you hear the quivering in his voice, and he does it maybe three or four times where it's super impactful, and I was like, this dude is in it.
Yeah.
In it. And he's not in much else. In terms of his career, he's
the arsehole guy from Fleabag, which is hilarious.
Yeah, that's it. That's the only notable credit that I went.
Have you seen Fleabag?
Yeah.
Every time someone sees her with him and they're like, how are you with it? He fucks me in the ass. That's the reason they're together. I love him. He's so good in this.
He has such beautiful control over restrained emotion.
The thing that stuck with me is his voice,
and yet he keeps it back.
The thing about acting and actors is like, no human wants to cry. We're not here to be like, look at me crying. Everyone tries to hide crying.
Yeah.
And yet all these actors go out and be like, it's like the Zac Efron, Charlie St. Cloud movie where he's crying everywhere. It's too much, man. Humans don't want to cry, so we always hold it back, and he is perfect.
And I think that's a very powerful tool because that to me is more impactful watching someone stopping themselves.
Yeah.
From being emotional.
Yes.
And you can feel it and it starts to well up in your own throat.
You're like.
Especially when M. Night's, again, signature move in this is how close can I get the camera to these people's faces and still have them be delivering this sincerely restrained. And it is like he said to them, you don't want to feel what you're feeling right now. Show me that this is the worst experience, but that you're trying to not let it show, but you're trying to elide it. With your emotions.
He creates a nice playground for actors as well to really showcase their talent. I think that's something great he does as a director and writer.
It's his grand story that just never lands, right?
Yeah, this is where I'm at with it. But this would have been like a small play to do this with everyone.
That's it.
And like just the exercise of coming to this place, trying to work out how you can involve a child actor in something so upsetting and yet like prevent it from actually impacting her. It's very clever the way that they're able to keep her in key frames and you're like, I know she didn't hear that line or I know that that's not a moment that she has full context for because someone would have been on set and been like, she obviously, like we're going to protect this young child.
Yeah.
I love her bit when Jonathan Groff says, remember what you did at Thanksgiving last year? Do that when I nod. And that's just, that's such a great thing. Instead of just throw a tantrum, like do that thing you did. They're in, like, they've got a little cahoots.
And again, but that's like, that's an example of good dialogue.
Yes.
Versus.
I wasn't a big fan of tantrum.
Pancakes.
Tantrum.
I think her tantrum feels performative, but that's because it is. It's like a 6-year-old pretending to throw a tantrum, which I kind of like.
But I thought she was kind of losing it. I was like, yeah, because she's just spiraling and saying the same thing and screaming and screaming. The scene that I loved from her, which kind of is led by Ben Aldridge, but it's when at the end of the very end of the film, he comes up into the treehouse and then they just hug each other and cry.
She asked, did Daddy Eric save everyone?
Beautiful line, beautiful moment.
It's so upsetting. It's so upsetting that the last thing he has to say to Eric, to Andrew is, I'm seeing our daughter when she's older, and you already referenced this, Frank, and she's found someone who loves her the way that we love each other. And it's not even...
It's not okay. It's not okay.
It's not okay, and it's so beautifully rendered, and it is so over the top and perfect for the grandness and the silliness of a movie that's about people having to stop the apocalypse.
To be honest, you cut out the ending news reports of the everyone's okay again. It's really weird. It all just passed. We're past it now.
It's a bit cheesy.
Let's rebuild, stupid. The car and the song pissed me off, stupid. I reckon from did Daddy Eric save everyone, crying scene in the treehouse.
And the end?
Find the van, get in the van.
Drive away.
Drive away.
I don't think it really, it doesn't change the movie that much for me either way. If you lost it, I'd be fine.
It's kind of a bit of just like, okay, it was real. Okay, it was worth it. Because if you don't find out if it's real, you're like, wow, they just killed Jonathan Groff for no reason maybe.
And I don't, that ambiguity.
Which is same to the end of the book. It's like,
yeah, I think but that's where I'm at. I want a far more ambiguous ending.
But have you seen Buried?
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds?
God, he had to coin him in somehow, didn't he?
Yeah, I love him. Great performance from him. But that's the ending where you go, I don't like that. That feels awful. Wow, I've just sat through
but
this
that's
movie,
a movie
for that.
Yeah, but exactly. I think a film needs to pull you in a direction and commit to a decision. Emotionally, what it's trying to do to its audience.
Yeah, but I see what you're saying, but I don't think...
I think this movie does that. I don't think that it's doing it in the way that offers the...
No, but it did it
maybe
for you.
The more...
You understand that we're on polar opposites here.
I know, but you're saying you want something that offers the uncertainty that goes...
And a dark,
what if that was for nothing?
Because
what if that was just...
What is the end of the world? So Judgment Day's happened or it's almost happened or it's like we're rebuilding as a society now. What is that? It's all unknown now. Fear of the unknown is so powerful. Leave us with that, right? I want to know what the scorched earth looks like. Oh, there was a curious part of me that's like, let it end. Let these guys wander the earth. I want to see what that looks like.
To you is that dark?
Furiosa.
It's the prequel.
But like, that's not this movie. Like,
it's
no,
not.
No, no. This,
to
is,
you
this is M. Night
is
big
that
studio movie.
Darker than Ben Aldridge having to kill Jonathan Groff. The ambiguity of... What is the apocalypse and do we go into it? Like, which one of those options for you is darker?
Well, because you as the audience have been made okay with his death as well, because he's okay with it.
Yeah.
In a weird way, it was kind of cathartic for everyone because it's like, no, please do it. And I bought it.
I agree because you want them to save the world because so we believe these four characters and we know that they have to do it. We don't want it to happen, but we do feel a relief of they saved the world. Yay, superhero ending. It's a relief thing
and I don't want
to. It'd be way darker ending if they just wandered into the – and they kept their family together.
Or if one was killed unwillingly.
Yeah. I mean, that's just painful for no reason.
Yeah. I don't know. Because he was so okay with it and because then the audience becomes okay with it, everyone's okay. Yeah. Everyone's okay. That's it. It's a happy ending.
Yeah.
It's a Disney ending.
Yeah. I'm not saying that this is always my disposition. I think there are some brilliant movies, especially horror films and thrillers and whatnot. Mm. Seven is one of them, that really sustain themselves and their legacies because of the depths of the ending and the way that it leaves you in despair. I don't think I could have dealt with this movie ending that way. The way it set itself up to be about that choice. And then when it was made, I think you're right, catharsis is a good way of putting it. It was cathartic. It was still the most unbearable decision. And when it ends, I don't go, oh, well, they saved the world. I'm like, how the fuck do you live with what you had to do, even with the knowledge that the world has been saved?
You know you've done the right thing, but then they're in the car driving.
You killed the man you loved.
Yeah.
He's gone.
And she has only one parent left.
Convince yourself that
was
worth
it. How's your life going to be good?
That's it. That's the rest of his life is making it worth it.
I killed my husband.
There's hope there, but it's very, very, very sad.
But also, what's the world they live in now? Because, you know, the apocalypse, how many people died in that experience? The world is totally changed.
Yeah.
So
it gives me a stomachache thinking about it. And so then when I'm like, which is a stomachache that I really like.
That's what that is.
I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
Well, I think,
which is rare.
I agree that you guys are disagreeing, but I can't budge.
I'm throwing in.
Ooh, let's see.
I'm throwing in. I'm going to a 7.
Oh, damn it. Threw in the
pal. Yeah, I mean, just talking about the emotionality, it really...
It pops.
Yeah, it pops.
It's a beautiful
thing. No one else throwing anything?
I'm willing to go down to a 9.5.
Hey. Threw in the pal.
Because I think there are moments that are sustain themselves a little too long. I don't disagree with you about the stuff in the bathroom, where I'm like... maybe find a more interesting way to do this.
Dave Bautista just kind of ran through the wall.
Yes, some of the lines are a little wishy-washy in this movie. I don't disagree that the dialogue is not its strongest point.
I gave it my score for performances alone and maybe a 2.2 there for some other reason.
Yeah.
I can't remember now. But I will go up very slightly.
Here we go. What's
to it? A 4.1.
Yeah.
Threw in the power.
Hell
yeah.
Purely because of his this thematic overlying thing that we've discovered.
The Shyamalan box.
Yeah, the Shyamalan box.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. I want to get the box set.
No.
It's too many films.
It
needs to be a smart trilogy.
It needs to be a rectangle segment.
You could erect a box for sure.
We'll have to cut that.
Circumcise the box.
Alrighty.
Bring on the next M. Night, I guess.
Yeah.
M. Night at midnight. Yep.
Threw in the pal.
Does the M stand for Mitt?
Mitt Romney? Thanks for listening to Throwing the Power. My name is Frank.
It stands for maybe. I think it's maybe night.
Maybe night, yeah.
So dusk.
I'm Marcus.
You can hit us up on Instagram. Throwing the Power at Instagram or ohheypals@gmail.com.
We're the pals.
What should they say?
Tell us what you think the M stands for.
Throwing the Power.